So, a big warm welcome to Charlie Cox for this episode on Coaching at Work Radio. Absolutely delighted to have you here with us, Charlie. You're co-founder of Climate Change Coaches, actually back in the day when it wasn't as much of a thing as it is now. So, a pioneer in that field, definitely. And I think you describe yourself as a stubborn optimist when it comes to climate change, which I think is a really lovely term, and we need more like you. You won an award with Coaching at Work in the Climate Change Coaching category in 20. Well, last year, 2020, sorry, 2021. Time's doing weird things, isn't it? Partly because of this climate mess we're in. And you've just written a book, co-authored a book called Climate Change Coaching: The Power of Connection to Create Climate Action. And I'm really excited to have you here today to say a little bit more about the book. So, big warm welcome, Charlie.
Thanks, Liz. It's lovely to be here. It's really lovely.
Fantastic. So the book's not long been published, and I think it's already causing a bit of a stir. So I'd just love to hear a bit more. I know you start off in the book talking about, what on earth, and I love the way you phrase that, of course, what on earth does coaching have to do with climate change? So could you sort of say a little bit about that? Because I think for some people who haven't yet made that leap.
Yeah, and I think it took me a long time to make that leap too. When I first looked at this crisis as a leadership coach working in often the CEO's office or the senior director's offices in organizations, and feeling like I really want to do something about this climate change problem, but I don't know what I'm allowed or not allowed to do as a coach. And so I spent quite a lot of time talking to people and looking around at the issue. And, as coaches, what we do is we listen below the words. So we listen to the emotional subtitles. And I started doing that, consciously not listening to the topics, if you like, that people were talking about. And I really noticed when I made that shift that even very, quote unquote, powerful people in authority, right down to, people like me when I'm at the school gates, picking up the kids, sound powerless when they talk about this issue. And that was a real light bulb moment for me. So I realized that two things started to crystallize around it. One was that a big problem in us taking action was our sense of powerlessness about this issue, because it is so systemic and so complex, and because we are single individuals. What we'd love is to be a hero with a silver bullet, or for someone else to be that and to have that, and that's never going to be the solution to a big complex problem like this. So on the one hand, it was, oh, actually, if we could transform people's powerlessness, maybe we could help them act. And then that led me to, oh, so actually, hang on, this is a human change problem, which is such an obvious thing to say when you think about it. Now, sitting here in 2022, the BBC uses phrases like human-induced climate change. Even in 2016, which is not that long ago, when I first started asking these questions, and I'm quite late to this, I realize, even then, people hadn't quite lined those two things up. And so when I we ran workshops in the early days at the Climate Change Coaches to try and understand who our work was best serving, we would always ask people, what are the images of climate change for you? And it doesn't matter who they were, whether they were very experienced sustainability people or they were the Women's Institute. We did a lot of work with them in Essex, some fantastic community women. Everyone said things like polar bears and the Amazon and deserts, and that was probably what I thought of as well. Or the other one, when we did our rebrand, our brand agency are amazing. The first set of photographs had things like wind turbines and solar panels. These are all the things that spring to mind. But it's not about those things. That's where the issue shows up with the polar bears, but it's not the polar bears that have to change their behavior. It's us. Where it starts is with us. And I think that's a really positive, empowering message, because I think when you look at the polar bear adrift on the ice floe, it feels incredibly painful. And because we can't physically go and do something about it, we push it away. We go, I just can't be with those feelings. I'll go back to things I can fix. And so you see really responsible, active people in their communities who aren't doing things about climate because it feels too hard to put their hands around, or it feels too distant. Or the other thing people tell us is, I don't feel clever enough because it feels so technically complex. And then the other barrier is, well, I'll have to be an activist and be angry and have a placard, and that's not really my thing. So we have this sort of prescribed set of actions and behaviours that we think you can use in response to this crisis. And so, you know, what is wonderful is there are many, many, many different ways, because it is a very complex problem. The good news about that is there's so many different solutions. Mm-hmm. I told you I was an optimist. And so, you know, what do coaches do really well? Well, we help people break free of these stuck perspectives, mm-hmm. break free of disempowerment. We help them find much more purposeful, resonant ways of relating to issues, whether that issue is find a new job or do something about climate change. So why aren't we doing something here? You know, this is the perfect place for us. You know, so that's what climate change has to do with coaching.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you say, it's pretty obvious when you kind of turn towards it. But for so long that we weren't making that connection, and it was kind of people on the fringe. You know, we can't do anything. I think because we're part of the system as coaches, aren't we? So we too felt powerless. We too felt overwhelmed. But so really, really, really good to hear you sort of make that connection. And I know you inspired me when I interviewed you for Coaching Work a few years back. You know, I just thought, God, yeah, this all makes so much sense. You know, and I know you've inspired so many others. And we still see that powerlessness, don't we? I'm like, I have conversations all the time with people who are pretty switched on, friends of mine, and they're just, yeah, but we can't, we're not, you know, no, I'm going to go for my travels, and because actually we can't really make a difference, and you know, yes, I'll still do my recycling, but la la la. And it's just that kind of, unless the big powers to be do something, you know, it's not going to shift. And yeah, exactly. So I think it's, yeah, coaching is so well placed. Anything else you would say about, you know, the contribution coach? I know you're going to talk a little bit about how, but you know, why coaching? Anything else you would say about it?
I think it's because coaching relationships contain an enormous amount of safety and honesty and vulnerability. And what is really needed here is the ability for people to say, I have no idea, but I feel really worried. And it is amazing, you know, just in the last couple of days, people have come up to me who I wouldn't expect to talk about this and said, I'm really worried. Because of the high temperatures, because of what's happening, not just in Europe in terms of fires, but right here in the UK in terms of wildfires. And so I think lots of people are switching on, and they're almost asking the starting point of every coaching conversation you and I have ever had, which is, I want to, I care about it. Mm. I don't know how, you know, and actually when someone says I want to, then it's their agenda. And we can say, would you like help to find out how? And, you know, when we do the climate change coaches, we do group coaching in organizations that have set targets around decarbonization or net zero, whatever those climate goals are. And often what happens is at the big end, the organization says, this is what we're going to do. And then they go down to the middle management. They say, tell us how. And at that point, it can get sticky. It can get harder to get traction because those people have never been asked to make an imaginative leap to that degree before. And also they're incredibly busy, you know, nobody's just sitting around in organizations. So our group coaching is so simple. I'm always staggered actually by how simple it is, that our coach gets a group together, maybe leaders, it may be a team, and simply creates the space for people to say, and they always do in the first couple of sessions, you know, I'm just really busy actually, or I just don't know what to do, or I think this is one for the experts, and all that kind of disempowerment comes out. But once it's out, people can come up the other side. Mm. And what they then start saying is, but I am actually really proud of our organization for doing this, you know, and then they start to move back into a place of, yeah, maybe we can. But crucially, it's because they vented this, these feelings. And often when we're not in that kind of coaching mode, which we can have in the corner shop as much as in the coaching conversation, by the way. But when we're not in that mode, we leap straight to what can you do about it? Mm-hmm. And we know as coaches that you are someone who feels stumped. What can you do about it? You'll get terrible answers or no answers at all. You've got to move them into a place of resonance before you can ask them that question. Yeah. But often we just short circuit that in real life. And so I think that's what coaching has, not just coaches, but that's what coaching has. It has the ability to create the conditions for people to be vulnerable. And that is not just by asking permission. Is it okay if we talk about climate change right now? Is it okay if we talk about these fires and how you feel? Because just because you started talking about it doesn't mean it is. Giving people the power. But also we say, you know, well, how do you feel about that? Rather than launching in with our own list of stuff. And we create this safety to express these big fears. And all of us have the ability to do this, even, you know, dare I say it, non-coaches. You know, we train people who aren't coaches to use coaching skills. Because, you know, as much as I really value all the training I've had and all the experience I've got in coaching, we're talking about human skills that to some extent we've been deprogrammed to use. In our kind of fix it culture. And I really feel strongly that we can democratize these. And that's partly why we wrote the book, to say that for 25 quid, you can have all this stuff too. You don't need to do thousands and thousands of pounds worth of training. You can dip your toe in with just a little bit here.
No, it's brilliant. It's brilliant. And as you say, there's so much emotion, isn't there, that goes with this territory. So I think that safe space that can come with coaching style conversations is paramount. And so, I mean, can you share just a couple of the clients, just, you know, who are you working with these days?
So we've just finished a really big project with NatWest, which was just fantastic. We trained, we assessed and then trained a cohort of climate change coaches inside the organisation, so internal coaches, to help them implement their really bold vision in the bank around climate. They had a new CEO a couple of years ago, Alison Rose, and she has brought in this really fantastic, bold vision around, not just around climate, but that's one of the pieces. And we've seen and we've heard from those coaches the real uptick in loyalty that has engendered in colleagues across the organization. So we trained their coaches and then we put them through a kind of action learning set series. So we trained them in the spring and then did action learning sets in the autumn to refresh those skills and help them crowdsource the solutions between them to problems they were having. So that wasn't us teaching, that was them learning that they actually did have the answers, you know, so it's sort of coaching in coaching. And we've just completed a really brilliant set of case studies interviewing them and their coachees. We sent in a professional environmental journalist to do that, and she's captured some fantastic stories. So that's one of the things we've done, and that's where, you know, a lot of what we're doing in organizations is helping to match the technical shift with a culture shift giving people the space to say, wow, this is a bit overwhelming. So that, you know, and so we were training their coaches to be able to do that. And there's been some really brilliant things. You know, two of the coaches we trained took some of our training and developed it into a group coaching session and have rolled that out across the commercial bank. Because it went down so well when they did it, and, you know, in full power to them, they created that, and the pride that has created is just amazing. Equally, we have subsequently gone in and run a group coaching program with another team in the organization, and one of the coaches we've trained is now picking that up after we've exited. So that's fantastic, because that means there's real impacts available there, and in everything we're doing, we're asking, not does this make us money, but does this make us impact? Because this is too important an issue to mess about just on profits, you know. And we are a for-profit organization, but we're for impact organization. And we've just gone through the process of the assessment to become a B Corporation, and that is rumbling through B Lab right now. Cross fingers, next year we might be successful. And that again has focused our minds on, what are we really here to do, and what's the most effective way to do that? So that's what we do there. But in other organizations, we've trained people. Natural England is a great example, where we have also trained their internal coaches, actually, but we've also trained an amazing group of people in the enforcement team, who are the people that have to go and deal with landowners who've broken the rules. Right. And these are often really kind, committed, quite technical people, who have to go and speak to people who, you know, in some cases it's a perfectly great conversation. In another case, it can get quite aggressive because it's quite triggering. There's an opportunity to be quite threatened by this conversation. And so we trained them in simple influencing tools using coaching skills to really understand and create common ground rather than to create animosity. And what was fascinating for them was, you know, we sort of said, but you could just revert to the law, you know, it's the law, you have to do it. And they said, but, you know, the worst case scenario is to have to go to court. What we want to do is be able to resolve this early on, come to an agreement and just everyone get on and to be in relationship with the people who own the land that we're stewards of. And I really took a lot from that. I thought that was fantastic to hear that actually, again and again, the clients we work with tell us that relationships are at the heart of their success.
Yeah.
And that is, you know, that's the message for coaching. Relationships are at the heart of our success, which is why the tagline for the book is the power of connection to create client action.
Wonderful, wonderful. And it's just up our street as coaches, isn't it? Relationships is what we do, supposedly. So and lovely to hear. And, you know, I think that's a really good example of how important it is to communicate in a certain way. And I know you've dedicated a whole section in the book to that. And you've already been feeling your way into it as you've been speaking. But just wondering if there's anything more you'd say about, you know, the importance and how we might go about transforming how we communicate.
I think there's two things. There's how we're being and what we're doing, you know, aren't there always? And in the book, we do a whole piece really around mindset as a climate change coach. And in some senses, it's just the mindset of a coach, but it's very important in this space where as coaches, we're in the problem too. So, you know, if I was coaching you and you wanted to, you know, get a new job, let's say, I'm just not even connected to that problem. You know, I care about you as my client, but I don't have a stake in whether you get a new job or not, you know. Whereas if you're talking about, you know, worrying about wildfires in Spain, then I'm worrying about that too. And suddenly that's bringing up a lot of limiting beliefs in me that I have to manage. And so that mindset piece, you know, we say in coaching, we believe in the client's ability no matter what. We have to really believe in not only the client's ability, but the planet's ability. And that doesn't mean being glib or falsely optimistic, but it means just holding not knowing and accepting not knowing. So acceptance and uncertainty, the ability to be with uncertainty, are two really big pieces of this. And we've borrowed from Buddhism quite a lot in the climate change coaches. And indeed in the book, we have a Buddhist scholar writing about acceptance and what that means. Because it doesn't mean laying down on the carpet and saying, oh, what will be, what will be. So I'm just going to do nothing. But it means not holding so tightly to things that we damage relationships. And what I see a lot in this space is people saying, it's going to be terrible. This is this doomsday scenario is going to happen. And that may well happen. But what's the motivation for saying that? Well, because it gives us a sense of certainty. If we have spelt out the absolute worst case, we can come to terms with it. Well, that's great until you share that with someone else who that power that you feel when you say it, they don't feel that. They feel threatened and terrified. And that sends them even further away from getting involved in action. So just recognizing the impact we have with our words and our sort of mindset is really important. So that's the first piece. And the second piece is that just simple coaching communication. You know, I'm not doing a very good job of it right now, but, you know, listening more than talking.
It's a podcast and you're the star, Charlie. Context appropriate. Cut away, carry on.
So I guess, you know, customizing questions, you know, so not just you know I'm really worried about the wildfires, what's concerning you, but what's worrying you about the wildfires, you know, really speaking to where people are at so that what you're asking doesn't jar. It helps that train of thought, that precious train of thought, stay on the track, because it is a really sacred sort of space when people start talking about this issue, and we want to just very gently help it along, not jar it. And so these kind of asking really good questions, asking really customized questions, and like I said earlier, contracting is one of the things I learned very early on when I changed to coaching people around this topic was, my God, people get fixed a lot about this topic.
Okay.
And I had clients who'd come in and say, oh, my family tells me I should calm down, that I'm getting obsessed, that I should stop worrying, you know, so whatever you do, don't do that, you know, but I'm the only person they had the opportunity to do that contracting with.
Yeah.
Everyone else just plowed on in and tried to fix them. And so it's really easy as a coach to accidentally miss that opportunity. Mm. Not just at the beginning of a relationship, but along the way, you know. And so I'm much more tentative now I'm still a coach one day a week. I'm much more tentative with people all the way through the conversation. Is it okay if I ask you this? And, you know, I just want to be clear that when I ask you this, I'm not saying this,
so that people
don't feel that, you know, I'm being falsely glib, for example, about the risks we face. And I think that, so that, you know, that's one thing. And another really important skill here, which is an important skill in coaching full stop, but is so important here, is acknowledging, you know, there's so much fear when you raise this subject, that whether that's fear of blame or it's fear of the existential crisis or whatever it is, that actually that skill of loving fear into safety is much more important. So, you know, again, to come back to this, you know, if you wanted a new job, I'd say, you know, Liz, you've had a fantastic career. You can get any job you want. And that might be helpful. But in this space, you know, being able to acknowledge not just the planet's resilience, whether that's nature or humankind, and our ability to innovate. But it's also maybe normalizing. Yeah, this is a really difficult thing to have to grapple with.
Yeah.
And that's another form of acknowledgement. And all of those things, because they don't have a question mark after them, often as coaches, we sort of skip past them to the questions. And actually, I've learned often the hard way that that's when the shift happens, when someone feels seen, recognized for the struggle they're having, and able to tap back into not only their capability, but the planet's capability or the system's capability. Because it's not just people's individual agency we have to scaffold, it's their belief in systems and planet. Mm. You know, what has your city done really well? Not to do with climate, but just tell me an example that's something they've done really well, just to reignite that belief that they're not all hopeless.
Yeah.
What about your organization? You know, who do you know that does make change? The change is possible. It might be nothing to do with the climate agenda.
Mm-hmm.
But just kind of reminding people of, it's just the perspective which we're looking at this issue from. Mm. Can we shift that perspective?
Yeah.
That's what really works. And for me, I love that because I love being contrary to some extent. And so I love being able to say, well, that's one way of looking at it. What's another?
You know? Lovely, lovely. Now, that's super interesting to listen to. So in some ways, as coaches, we have all we need. And in other ways, there's quite a lot to learn, really, in terms of how we go about this and what we might want to dial up or dial down. And the relationship and being and the fact that we're in it as well. So really lovely to hear you articulate so much around that. And you're talking about the potential for the system to change. And I know there's a whole section in your book, isn't there, which takes that kind of more systemic stance. I don't know if there's anything more you want to say around that.
I mean, I can sort of talk a little bit about how we're seeing organizations changing, because it's really fascinating and it's completely live. You know, nobody has all the answers. And I would say, you know, section C of the book is about organizational change and social change. But it's, you know, a couple of chapters. I mean, this is something that people have written libraries of books on. So, I want to sort of manage expectations. But what we do have in the book is we have 40 contributors and some of the really fascinating ones come in that section where they're talking about in a very granular way about how they're making this happen. What I see is sort of a sliding scale of responses to the climate emergency in organizations. One is, we're going to decarbonize our operations as if the world will continue as normal. And we want to just be, you know, do the right thing and get to zero. And that's great. If everyone did that, that would be fantastic. And so that's a much more technical challenge than necessarily, you know, imaginative. So that's right, you know, what do we do? And Frank Negriello from Unipart talks in his case study about actually a lot of the decisions about decarbonizing Unipart could be made by sort of six people in a room, you know, hey, let's just make their fleet entirely electric. you can make that decision, just press the button. But what they did was they went down to the factory floor. They already have a coaching mentality in the organization called the Unipart Way. So they rolled it out and they said, guys, what would we do about this to get to that last mile, almost to eliminate waste, to eliminate carbon? How can we do that? What do you know? And they got some fantastic ideas, but they also got buy-in. So yeah, that's one way of doing it. You know, just look at our ops, get our house in order. But at the other end, and we saw this with organizations in insurance and in banking, where their job is to underpin the economy, they're asking really big blue sky questions about what's the future of money, what will the economy look like without fossil fuels, you know, what will globalization look like, you know, what will our supply chains out into places like Asia look like in the context of climate breakdown, how will we look after our people, you know, there's big questions that shake everything about what you know and that can be quite discombobulating for people. Some people love it and other people find that really hard because you're sitting in the question for quite a long time. You don't get to answers. So what we're noticing is that in the organizations that are trying to do that, they're going for small bets, rapid fail techniques. So they're saying, right, we're going to try little kind of incubator ideas. We're not going to say this is our transformation project and we're just going to roll it out. We're going to try lots of things until we work out a way of getting it right. And that's really, there's a lot to draw there from the Kinevan model that Dave Snowden from IBM came up with, which is, and I met Dave for the book, which is this idea that of different contexts. And often people think that this is a complicated context, what he'd call complicated, which is if we get the experts in, they can sort it out, they'll tell us. It's just complicated. Whereas he would argue that this is a complex system, a complex situation. And actually, we only really know cause and effect afterwards. So we can't really plan or know. We have to, therefore, we don't want to take really big bets because we might be completely wrong. And the way I would kind of explain a complex system is none of the people that got involved in the fall of the Berlin Wall, in all of the events that led up to it, all over Europe, had any idea that what they were doing ultimately led to the fall of the Berlin Wall. But now we'd look back and we'd say, well, because of that thing that happened in Leipzig. Sure. And that's kind of what's happening in a similar way, that all these people go, well, this doesn't really matter. This isn't going to move the dial. And then it turns out that it adds up to something that did. And so you can't have a lovely, you know, plan on that. And so the best organizations are recognizing that. So what does that require? That requires psychological safety. And in the book, we talk a lot about that. And it requires being open to the voices of dissent and open to diversity to really allow all these different perspectives in and to say, this is all going to improve the process, not slow down my master plan. So that's kind of what's happening in two different ways. We're seeing this trajectory from business as usual to the world is going to fundamentally shift on its axis and who are we going to be then? And then the final thing I'd say about organizations is that, you know, we're often talking to really quite big organizations, but in Oxfordshire, where I live, I'm on the board of something called Oxfordshire Business First, which is a group of business people. We're all volunteers and we basically help create events that help local businesses have insight and share insights with each other. Because often when you're running a medium-sized enterprise, you're under the business more than you are on it, and we want to create opportunities for people to get on it free and for nothing a lot of the time.
Well, that sounds really, really important, the way you're working with organizations in this way.
What we're seeing at SME level, particularly M more than S, I guess, is that if you're in the supply chain to one of the bigger guys, increasingly the bigger guys are saying, so what are you doing about your carbon footprint? Because some of that is attached to my carbon footprint. So if, as a bigger organization, you start looking at your footprint, you say, great, well, we can deal with a lot of this in-house, but actually some of it's being created out of house on our behalf in our manufacturing, for example, or in our call centers, depending what it is. And if we're going to really say we got to zero, they've got to get to zero. Or we've got to change supplier. Mm-hmm. And so that's when the pressure starts to fall onto the smaller guys to say, okay, now actually we've got to do it too. So there's an imperative coming down the tracks, not just driven by people wanting to do it, feeling purposeful and motivated and all those lovely things, but people realizing that their business depends on them doing it. Yeah. And I really love coaches that work with businesses to know that.
Yeah.
Because I think we often grapple with, like, am I allowed to talk about this with people? I really feel like that ship has, if not sailed, then it is sailing, that people will really need to get to grips with this. And for every business that calls in a sustainability person to help, a coach alongside that process could be really valuable to help them get over the fear of change that naturally occurs when that sustainability person says, here's the plan.
Yeah. Brilliant. No, that's really makes a lot of sense and really interesting. There's a lot to learn, and I'm glad you've got your book out there. and just getting a sense of, you know, how it's not that easy to be doing this coaching in some ways. And I know you talk a little bit about the book, just to sort of finish off here, really, perhaps something around what does a coach need to do for themselves to equip themselves for this work?
We have a whole section in section D of the book, which is how to coach yourself. And that's because the book is aimed not only at coaches, but also at sustainability professionals, or people driving a climate agenda in some way.
Yeah.
But actually, I think a lot of that as a coach, even writing it, I had to think, I could do with some more of this. You know, we've got a section on burnout and stress. And I was probably writing that at 2 o'clock in the morning thinking,
there you go.
I'm sure I should have gone to bed a few hours ago. And we've got another one on resilience. And I think it certainly is the case that we could do with a lot more self-care. And I think lots of coaches talk about self-care, but, you know, I put my own hand up. I'm not very good at it. I think probably quite a few other people aren't very good at it either. And in this space, we do have to do more of it simply because, you know, climate grief and despair will come and grab you, as it has for lots of people I know in the last couple of days with the massive temperatures in Europe and the UK. And so you need to be well rested and much more importantly, well connected. I think feeling alone is a huge problem. So again, that's why the title of the book is The Power of Connection.
Power of Connection.
Because being alone, it just and feeling purposeless or feeling inactive. You know, I'm not sure what I'm supposed to be doing. You know, I want to do something, but I'm not sure what it is. That's one kind of risk factor. Yeah. And another one is I just don't feel like I'm doing enough because what I'm doing doesn't feel resonant enough. That might be another risk factor. And also I'm just absolutely wrung out, and so that everything feels overwhelming. So those things, you know, just kind of watching those and looking after ourselves is really important, and just accepting that everyone's version of self-care is different. It might not be sitting cross-legged going on, you know, it might be going out and playing vigorous, you know, football with another team of people, you know.
Exactly.
It might be going and having a cup of tea, you know, or something, whatever it means for you, but just do something. I'd also say I noticed from clients that's a time when going to places of high consumption can be very difficult. So airports, shopping centres, huge car parks, anywhere that kind of just like writ large is our use of fossil fuels. That can be really hard because it feels like it's just me against all of this. And so sort of keeping away from those places, getting out into nature can be really helpful. This is one of those things where we are in it as well as working on it. And for me, that's what makes this more challenging, but also ultimately a much more rewarding form of coaching. And so we have a coach training program that we run twice a year. We're running the next cohort in September.
Okay.
And people come into that program. It's an ICF accredited program. You get CCUs. People come in and quite rightly say, I want to learn how to do this with people. And we say, great, here's how to do that. And they get a free copy of the book so they can, you know, read the book alongside. But actually what consistently people say when they come out of the program is, wow, I didn't realize how much I had to work on my relationship to the crisis in order that I could be with other people in their relationship with it.
Yeah.
And it's sort of obvious, but because again, we're very action focused, we sort of put ourselves aside and we say, let's get on in. But actually really spending time getting to grips with that which in our training course happens because, of course, they have to co-coach to learn the skills. So, you know, that's the beauty of that. It allows two processes to happen at once. And so for people listening who want to do this, I'd really say spend some time thinking about that, talking to other people about it, just noticing, you know, what comes up for you, and then working out what your self-management toolkit might be, the way that you did when you trained as a coach.
And that start, the next one starts in October, did you say?
It starts in October, but we have a pre-course preparation call on the 27th of September. So if you sign up, I think it's by the 20th, then you get that free call as well. But the course itself starts in October, and it's 8 sessions, 6 core sessions, a practice lab. And then also what we feel very importantly, very strongly about, is we have a 90-minute session on business development. How do you land this into your coaching practice? How do you talk to clients about it?
Really important.
To make so that it stands a chance again of having impact, of getting out there in the world. We wanted to make sure that we did that.
So people can find out more on, do you want to say the website, the URL?
It's climatechangecoaches.com/coaches. And you can find out everything about that. And also on that site is a big page about our book, which also has a free chapter available to download for people who want to just sort of dip a toe in and see before they maybe go on and buy it. But also we have a list of events, places where we're turning up, and a list of podcasts. So once this podcast comes out, we'll put it on there as well.
Perfect. And we did a review of the book in Coaching at Work, and I'm sure other people have reviewed it. And it is a cracking book, so I do recommend it. It's published by McGraw-Hill Open University Press, isn't it? And also, you know, we're really excited that you're going to be one of our panelists at Coaching at Work conference on the 17th of November, where we'll have a session on nature-based coaching. So really looking forward to that. Anything else you want to say about where people might engage with you or anything like that, or...?
I mean, just we'd love people to find us on LinkedIn and to come along to the events that we're hosting in the autumn. We're going to be hosting a series of events about how do we embed this into organizations. So that might be of interest to people, given that this is coaching at work. And I'd really just want to say, you know, I'm always happy to have a chat with coaches that want to work out what they're doing. So please don't be a stranger. Do reach out.
Brilliant. Wonderful. So fantastic. I feel empowered, Charlie. So some of the powerlessness has kind of ebbed away a little in the face of this heat wave we're currently dealing with. But lovely to be with you today. So thank you so much.
Thanks ever so much, Liz.